Fourth case, United States v. Parker. Mr. Grant.
May it please the Court, this appeal focuses on whether Georgia v. Randolph applies when a tenant is unable to object to a request to search his premises because of an unconstitutional search and therefore a removal of him from the premises. But before I address this important argument, let me first say that my client has instructed me to inform the Court that with respect to his other argument, the ineffective assistance of counsel claim, if this Court would deem that he would waive a subsequent ineffective assistance claim if he raises it now on direct appeal, he would like to withdraw the claim and reserve it for the collateral purposes. But going back to Georgia versus Randolph, the Supreme Court in that case held that law enforcement authorities cannot search the premises over the objection of a tenant who is present and objects. In so holding, the Court drew a fine line to ensure that although there is no affirmative obligation on law enforcement authorities, nonetheless, those law enforcement authorities must adhere to or accede to an objection of a tenant who's on the premises where they say, no, you cannot come in, you cannot search, and cannot prevent the individual through an act from objecting to the request for permission to search. So therefore, the Court in Georgia versus Randolph anticipated the factual situation which has arisen in the case before you today, and they've held that so long as there is no evidence that the police have removed a potentially objecting tenant from the entrance for the sake of avoiding a possible objection, that the objection is reasonable. But if there is any reason to think that he has been removed through coercion, through unlawful coercion as in this case, then of course the research would become unreasonable. So this is really a straightforward application of the rule in the Georgia versus Randolph case. But for the unconstitutional search, the police authorities would not have been inside the house, would not have searched, would not have uncovered the incriminating information they weren't looking for, but they found it, which led to his subsequent conviction. Now, there's no question in this case but that the arrest was unlawful. There is almost nothing in the entire record to suggest what information law enforcement authorities had prior to the arrest. Indeed, the only thing that is stated in the entire transcript of the motion to suppress on page 21 is that one officer knew that he was responding to an armed disturbance. He also knew the address of where he was dispatched to. So the address plus the fact that he knows this was an armed disturbance is not tantamount to probable cause for an arrest.
Well, what's he supposed to do?
He's supposed to do police work and find out whether or not there is probable cause to arrest.
No, but armed disturbance sounds like something very, emergency sort of thing.
Well, what's a weapons disturbance? I misspoke. But
whatever you call it, it sounds dangerous. The police want to do something. They don't want to.
Well, they should investigate. Absolutely. They should send their police cars.
What are they supposed to do? What would the investigation consist of?
Investigation would go there, would talk to witnesses, which they didn't do. Without talking to witnesses, they immediately went and arrested my client. Right. You first want to marshal facts. And indeed, all the evidence that was submitted arose after the arrest. They arrested, removed my client from the house, and then went and spoke to witnesses. And I should say that even after speaking to witnesses, it's not clear they met probable cause. Because the witnesses said, it sounded like a gunshot. We didn't see anybody with a gun. We didn't see who fired the shot. We didn't see where the shot was fired. All we know is that we heard a gunshot. We thought it was my client. But that's even after the arrest. What I want to focus on is what information was in the record prior to the arrest. Again, response to weapons disturbance and the address of where it was taking place. That can't be tantamount to probable cause. It could have been a neighbor who discharged a weapon. It could have been the backfire of a car. It could have been all sorts of things. Nothing pointing to the fact that there's a reason to believe, a strong reason to believe, that my client had been the one posing a threat. Indeed, there was never any information submitted to suggest that there was a substantial risk of physical harm to another person, which is requisite under Indiana law with respect to criminal recklessness. Nothing was ever put in the record even about that, even after the arrest. So this is a sort of a vanilla case which suggests that there's just an absence of anything pointing to my client to justify the arrest. Once you reach that conclusion, as I think I urge you to do, because there simply is no other record upon which to rely upon information. That then leads to the conclusion under Georgia versus Randolph that we have a situation where somebody cannot object to a search merely because he has been removed from the situation via the unconstitutional arrest. He's isolated. He can't respond. And I think the logic of Georgia versus Randolph, which empowers, if you will, homeowners to decline the request of police to enter into the premises, would therefore dictate that the suppression motion here, the decision of the court below, certainly be reversed. And I think if you think about the logic of the...
Well, you have to, to get within Georgia versus Randolph, you have to show that the police removed him so that they could get her consent without his contradicting her.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I don't think that the court had in mind that the defendant would be able to probe the motivations of individual police officers. I mean, to the contrary, the court in Wren was very clear that the Supreme Court is shying away from any test that looks at subjective motivations of police officers. Why did they make this arrest? Why did they remove him? Rather, the court in Wren said, let's look to objective indicia. And in that case, they said, as long as there's probable cause, we won't second-guess motivations. And so the argument really is an inverse Wren. All we're saying is because there is no probable cause, therefore there is no need to get into subjective motivations, and therefore conclude that the lack of probable cause dooms not only the arrest, but also dooms the search because the consent is invalid or the consent makes the search unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. So I think that, viewed any way, it's relatively clear then that Georgia versus Randolph, a relatively straightforward application, must yield the conclusion that this search has to be invalidated. We simply don't want a situation to give an incentive to the police to arrest first and then ask questions.
Well, now, they get this complaint and they go to the house, and then what happened?
They went to, all we know from the record, is they went to the house, immediately arrested
the client. What do you
mean
immediately arrested? They barged in or what? How did they find him?
Well, again, it's not in the record, but they went into the house and...
They just barged in?
I believe the door was open and asked him to come out and then arrested him.
The door was open?
I believe, the door wasn't locked. The door was shut, but not...
However, there was a shot fired.
The testimony later on in the suppression motion was... I'm sorry.
At the time you went in, somebody had reported there was an incident involving a shooting, a shot.
Yes.
Okay. So now you want them to proceed cautiously to knock on the door and say, are you the one doing the shooting, or how would you suspect they would do it?
Well, I believe the first thing is there were witnesses, and you would talk to witnesses.
Pause. If you think there's an immediate situation going on where somebody's got a gun or so there's been a shooting, you stop and talk to witnesses and ask them?
Well, you want to make sure the witnesses are safe.
Yeah, well, you want to make sure that this shooter is not in the house shooting somebody, too, don't you? It's an immediate thing. It's a requirement.
As you said, that there was exigent circumstances. One could detain the individual to do a protective sweep.
Well, you could. Okay. So they've got a right to walk in the house to look where they're shooting. They don't have to stop and knock on the door and ask police.
Well, they stopped. They found out that he didn't have a gun. He was there. They stopped him.
You don't think they should then explore it further inside the house?
They did a protective sweep, and I'm not contesting the protective sweep. Okay. I think that was justifiable. But they took the detention and a protective sweep, morphed it into a full-fledged custody arrest, and then went back and got the custody.
The judge said they arrested him as he left the back of the house.
Right, that's not in the record, Your Honor. The evidence,
judge
the records
made it
that
up,
went.
He made it up.
I'm not saying he's made it up. I'm just saying
I don't know. Where did he learn it?
I don't know, Your Honor. I'm just saying that
You didn't say in your brief he was wrong, did you?
I don't think it's material. I mean, the issue
I
is...
I do.
Well, in what sense? They went to the house, and the understanding is they asked him, either they asked him to come out or they grabbed him and then arrested him. And I'm not sure that... I don't think that matters.
That's not what Judge Miller said. They said they arrested him as he was leaving the house from the rear door.
There was no testimony that, and for what that I can know. I don't know that it's relevant, and I'm not trying to quibble
nice
with the judge.
Well, it would be nice to have a picture of what exactly happened.
Well, it's again.
Well, didn't anyone ask the police or ask your client what the circumstances of the arrest were?
The testimony at the suppression motion by Officer Bartone is that he went to the house, to the back door, and arrested my client and took him into custody. There's no more details than that. There were other evidence that weren't put into the record, but that's all that was in the suppression motion. The frustration is it's a dearth of evidence in the suppression. This is an unusual case because usually you have more information. Who called the police? It wasn't in the record. Was there a tape of the 911 in the record? No. Nothing's there. If I see my time is up, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Mason, sec.
May it please the court, my name is John Machazik, and please the court, Mr. Krent. My name is John Machazik. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney, and I'm here representing the United States. And I'd like to start off by addressing the issue of why there is no dearth of evidence pertaining to the arrest in this case. And it's not clear from the record. And the reason is that when the defendant filed his original motion to suppress, he moved to suppress his statements that were made voluntarily in the police car and under the 5th and 14th Amendments. And then he moved to suppress the search of the house under the 4th Amendment because he contended there was no valid consent. Judge Miller ruled that on its face, the motion did not state a claim, for a 5th Amendment claim. Under Miranda because it didn't state that he had been questioned, a custodial interrogation. But said, and he also said that with regard to the 14th Amendment due process issue, whether there was probable cause for his arrest, he asked the defendant to provide case support for the fact that that would be a basis for suppressing the statements if there wasn't probable cause for the arrest. When we went to the hearing, and this is an example of why it's not a good thing to not put everything on the record, I told the defense attorney that I was not going to offer any of those statements during the trial, and he said that he couldn't find any cases to support his claim for suppression of the statements. So that claim was not wasn't pursued during
wasn't fleshed out.
So right. It wasn't pursued during the hearing. There was certainly probable cause to arrest the defendant. In my response to the original motion, I described briefly that when other officers went to the house, they did talk to witnesses other than the co-tenant, and they informed the officers that the defendant had fired a shotgun, and he was then taken into custody and placed in the car. Officer Bartone, who was the only witness that I put on during the suppression hearing, arrived thereafter, but he was the one that spoke with the co-tenant.
And got permission to enter the house.
And then got permission to enter the house.
That's the only relevant issue as far as you were concerned in the motion to suppress the search.
At that point.
Yeah.
And of course, this occurred back in, I think, it might have been April of 2005, and Randolph wasn't decided until March of this year. So there was no basis to assert anything pertaining to his lack of consenting to the search. The officers just got permission.
It just seems odd that the judge and the parties wouldn't like to have just a narrative, you know, what happened. They arrive, what happens then? Do they go into the house, not go into the house? He comes out or what? It's just curious that that's all so mysterious.
Well, it's because
open? Was it unlocked? Did they try to? It's very strange.
The issue had to do with his statement, not with the arrest.
Yes, Your Honor. That's the reason, Judge Bauer and Judge Posner, that's why we didn't flesh that out. There was no point to go into that because the real issue at that point was consent. And the defense attorney, when he was making his argument in the suppression motion, starts out his argument by saying the only real issue here is consent. And so that's why we didn't have that evidence. And that is why I contend that this issue is not properly before this court. it's not a question of waiver because the issue didn't it wasn't even there in the law before Randolph was decided. Mm-hmm. But it is a question of plain error. And on this record, there is no error when it comes to Randolph. Standard for the Randolph under Randolph would be whether the officers made a pretextual detention of the defendant in this case, and of course there's simply nothing there to decide that one way or the other. And it's an example of where there is no plain error on the record. And for that reason, I believe that this case is not properly before the court. And since the defense is not going to argue, appellant is not arguing the issue of counsel performance,
they're not only not arguing, they're withdrawing.
Yeah. Withdraw it. You can't even argue it so far.
That's a big distinction for the purpose of collateral review.
He's waiting to pounce on later.
Right. Okay. Well, then I'm not going to address it either.
Attaboy.
Thank you. If the court has no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chasek. Mr. Grant, time had expired, but you may have a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just very briefly, it's clear that there was alleged that there was no probable cause for the arrest in the motion for the suppression. That was cited in the brief, and there's no question about it. The consequences have differed in the argument that I've raised before you as to the argument raised below, but the claim was made clearly that there was no probable cause, and the consequences led to the unconstitutional search, and therefore from the unconstitutional search to the suppression. The links were all made. I fleshed them out somewhat differently than was done below, but as this court has held in Bew and others, as long as you state the claim clearly below, then you can use new arguments to in fact put clothes on those arguments. So the fact that there was it's undeniable that this is what was before the lower court means the unconstitutionality of the arrest was there, and there's nothing in the record, as evidently conceded by opposing counsel, to suggest that there was probable cause. And indeed, in his response, everything he said in the response to the motion to dismiss about why there was probable cause arose after the arrest, arose when Officer Bottone and others talked to the witnesses post-arrest. Can't have that for warrantless searches. Thank you, Your Honor.
Our thanks to both counsel. And Ms. Grant, you have an additional thanks to the court for accepting the appointment and so ably representing Mr. Parker.
Thank you, Your Honor.